From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 9th day of August, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. He'll help us preview tomorrow's USDA crop production, World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimates reports. Those are due out at 11 a.m. Central, and you can find them online at willag.org not long after that. Along the way today, we'll check in on the weather forecast with Mike Tenori. He's at T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. And if we can get hold of him, though, he's at the Illinois State Fair showing cattle this week. We'll also talk with Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's turn our attention now to what happened at the CME Group in Chicago for the day. We're joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Todd.
So let's talk a little bit about what you think will happen tomorrow in the USDA report, and then what's been teed up, if anything, to this point as it relates to the charts and how you've read them.
Well, first time I took a glance at the average trade estimate, it kind of made me nervous. That it was, I looked at that and I said, how are we going to get a bullish report out of this report? Because it looks like the average trade estimate is kind of on the low side. And if USDA comes into the low side, then it's already built in, so there's nothing bullish. And if they would happen to kind of go toward the upper end of the range, then it would be really bearish, because it would, if USDA would come in with a 78-acre or, I mean, a
78
bushel yield.
Yeah,
178 yield. And all of a sudden you got, you know, 180 million bushels of more corn, and then that would be thrown right into carryout. And the average trade guess for carryout is sitting around 1636. So let's say all of a sudden you bump that up to 1.8, you know, and then all of a sudden things ain't quite as bullish. And that same thing with wheat, or I mean soybeans. The trade's looking at soybeans at 638 carry out, and they're looking at a soybean yield at 46.5. And if USDA would go up to 51.5, that would be another 80 million bushels or 90 million bushels. Then all of a sudden we're looking at a carry out about 700. So I guess that's what worries me more than anything going into an August crop report is USDA may decide to go on the high side. If they do, then the carryout's going to look awful sloppy. If they come in on what the average trade guess is looking at, it would be considered old news that's already built in. So I'm a little worried. And then especially when I look at the technical indicators, they're all in that overbought territory. And so that alone tells you that the market is probably ripe for some kind of setback and or period of consolidation. It probably just depends upon what USDA gives us tomorrow. But just looking at the technical indicators, I think we're ripe for some kind of consolidation or some kind of setback. And today, I think, was part of that. I think a lot of people looked at those numbers and just kind of went to the exit door, and that's why we saw a lot of liquidation and some downward pressure in the market here today.
How is it, do you think, that over the last month or so we've been talking about a 178, a 180, a 182, but the trade really is considering this a 176.1 or thereabouts crop size? That surprised me when I saw that average number come out.
Well, that did too. I mean, like you said, that's all we heard based upon the crop models that kind of used the crop rating levels as a main source of information, and they try to model that out. That was all pushing up toward that 180 and then maybe a 51 or 52 bushel bean yield. So I was a little surprised that the trade came out as low as they did. I think it might be I there is some very excellent corn out there. I think there's a kind of a circle in kind of east central Illinois and maybe west central Indiana that had some pollination problems, and that's been getting a lot of play. I think on the Twitter wire, I've seen some other areas. And of course, the thing on the Twitter wire, what you're seeing is probably the worst of the samples. And that makes you, you know, but I do know that there's a lot of good corn. And of course, you mentioned it, I think, on Twitter on your trip back from Fargo, North yep. Dakota, that everything looked pretty good. But then you did see a few spots that were probably on the weak side, you know. So.
Yeah, I did, and I sent that out on my Twitter feed again today with kind of a map of what I thought things looked like, of what I've seen. And then if you put it together with some of the other National Weather Service rainfall maps and just experience, I guess I'm of the idea that maybe that 176 is better. Whatever it comes out at, it's going to be, I think, a pretty good number because most of the crop is so far along that USDA ought to have some pretty good counts, at least on corn. Soybeans are a different rascal to deal with. Though I guess, Dan, as I looked at the soybean crop, I personally think that the soybean crop is in better condition across the whole of the Corn Belt than I do the corn crop. And the corn crop looks, in some places, just phenomenal. But there are areas, that, even in the middle of the phenomenal places, like north of Peoria, there are places where clearly there's some drought stress there. I haven't gone to the east, so I haven't really taken a look at the areas you talked about with some nick problems, but that doesn't surprise me either. And even in, you know, some of these areas, there's, and I talked to Howard Brown, who's an Illini FS GrowMark agronomist this morning about this a little bit, because I thought it might have been fungicide, but some gray-green or green-gray corn in some of the best areas, and he thinks, and he told me that's moisture stress, not necessarily drought stress, but for some reason, and I would guess maybe the crop got in later and it didn't have to root down so far, and it's just stressed at this point. So there's a lot to deal with, and I guess we'll find out tomorrow morning. Should be an interesting 11 o'clock hour, I would think. Maybe one of the more interesting August crop production reports we've had in a while.
Well, August crop reports, I've always said, of course, you know, if it was my wishes, I'd do away with a lot of these crop reports, and August would be one of them, because I think all August does is just get everybody good and bearish before the combines roll. So we'll see whether or not that's the case tomorrow or not. But, yeah, the August report, as far as I'm concerned, we could do away with that and just wait on the September.
You know what it's going to show? It's going to show a high yield, and it's going to be based on really, 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 really high population, and then we'll start.
I know that's why I think they had to do away with the August crop report. We need to save some money and just do away with it. If it's all going to be about population multiplied by average year weight and, you know, average stock, you know, pods per stock or whatever, we could do away with a report like that. You know, we need to have something that's going to be a little more measurable. We need to know what the ear weight is. We need to kind of know what the actual pods are and how many beans are in those pods. We need a little more solid number. Just going through an exercise of a mathematical exercise, I think, is a waste of money as far as I'm concerned.
All right. Well, we'll watch and see what all happens tomorrow, and we'll talk with you again next week about it and have a good idea of what it's done to the charts. Hey, thank you so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us for the day.
I'm sure I didn't win any friends today.
Probably not, Dan. Probably not.
Probably not, but that's okay. I'm retired now, so I don't need that many friends. So, we'll see what it is, and we'll talk next week, Todd.
All righty. That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report for a Thursday afternoon. Quick note, Commodity Week will not be recorded today because of the crop production and WASDE figures, which are due out at 11 o'clock tomorrow. We'll have that program live on the air on our home station tomorrow, and then the rest of the stations over the weekend and up on the website tomorrow afternoon on Friday. The reports are due out at 11. 7 o'clock, and we'll have those numbers at willag.org as soon as we can get them posted there. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with the IRS and how farms will fare under new tax deductions. Regulations proposed by the Treasury Department and the IRS on Wednesday detail a new 20% deduction for so-called pass-through entities, reports Politico, which was created by the tax law enacted earlier this year. It comes with some favorable terms for the many farms and ranches structured as pass-throughs, things like partnerships, limited liability companies, or sole proprietorships, according to several tax consultants and accountants. Businesses made up of more than one entity can be aggregated to claim the new deduction as long as they have common ownership and rental income will qualify. Many producers place their agricultural land in a separate entity from the farm itself for several reasons, such as liability protection and succession planning. A senior Treasury official said allowing aggregation is meant to keep single businesses from reorganizing and to ensure pass-throughs are subject to an effective tax rate nearly as low as corporations, which had their rate cut to 21%. However, it appears that cash rent or crop share landlords will not qualify for the new deduction, known as Section 199A. That according to Veronica Nyme. She's an economist at the American Farm Bureau Federation. "We do have a lot of absentee landowners out there," she says. "They hold on to the family farmland, even though they're not living there, and rent it to someone else." She said, in this case, the income would not rise to the level of trades or business. That's the threshold. Well, we'll stay with finances for the moment and move to a release from the St. Louis Federal Ag Survey. That survey shows the majority of agricultural bankers expect farm income to decline next quarter, just as it did in this second quarter report. Quality farmland values also fell in the most recent survey, according to the latest Agricultural Finance Monitor published by the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. There was a slight improvement in cash rents compared to a year ago. Survey results show agricultural bankers continue to report year-over-year declines in farm income. The current index value marks the 18th consecutive quarter with a value below 100. The second quarter index value for farm income was 58. The St. Louis Federal Reserve Bank reports that farm income in some areas of its region is less volatile than others, with the most volatility in the row crop regions. The Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis serves the states that comprise the Federal Reserve's 8th District, which includes all of Arkansas, eastern Missouri, southern Indiana, southern Illinois, western Kentucky, western Tennessee, and northern Mississippi. Let's go to Washington, D.C. now, where the Trump administration is returning Waters of the U.S., or WOTUS, Water Permitting Authority, to more states in a move the American Farm Bureau Federation hails as curtailing federal overreach and limiting farmer activities. Until now, just two states, Michigan and New Jersey, could issue permits to allow landowners to move soil that could affect federally regulated waters. But the Trump administration has now decided in an interagency agreement to return water permitting authority to possibly another 14 states interested in issuing the permits. American Farm Bureau's Don Parrish sees the move as key to reversing some of the EPA's earlier overreach.
This is going to allow people that at the state and local level to work with their state. They already do it in the context of pollution permits. They're going to be able to do it now in terms of WOTUS permits.
Parrish says that should make the process easier.
We think it's going to be easier and quicker for people that need permits, including, you know, apparently until we get a new rule, farmers and ranchers.
And Parrish says none of this upends federal litigation over court jurisdiction on WOTUS.
I think we're going to still go through the process to withdraw the 2015 rule, and we're going to replace it. And this is only about who administers where those lines, you know, after those lines are drawn.
Parrish expects some states will be a little tougher, others a little easier in administering permits. But he argues there will likely be more consistency and clarity at the state versus federal level in clean water regulation. We'll stay at the national level for the moment, and with the Trump administration, there were ICE raids on ag operations in Nebraska and Minnesota this week. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement on Wednesday swept through agricultural businesses in 6 communities in Nebraska and 2 in Minnesota, including a tomato greenhouse facility, a potato processor, a cattle company, a grain company, a pork plant, restaurants, and other farms and ranches. ICE arrested 133 workers suspected of being in the country illegally and issued criminal arrest warrants to 17 individuals connected to an alleged conspiracy to exploit illegal labor for profit, fraud, and money laundering. The raid culminated a 15-month ongoing investigation coordinated with federal, state, and local law enforcement. Tracy Cormier, a special agent in charge of Homeland Security's St. Paul, Minnesota office, told the Omaha Herald that the operation was one of the largest in the Homeland Security investigation's 15-year history. And finally, on a lighter note, well, the Illinois State Fair is underway in Springfield. It's a great place to go see the best of Corn Belt agriculture. Throughout the 11-day run of the fair, 4-H'ers will be competing in all kinds of competitions, the highlight of which comes on Tuesday the 14th with the commodity auction and the governor's sale of champions. It starts at 5 o'clock in the Livestock Center. The fair is open daily from 7 a.m. to midnight through Sunday, August the 19th in Springfield. The entrance fee is $10 for adults, $3 for those over age 60, and children 12 and under are free. The parking fee is $5. The fair includes a carnival, grandstand acts, harness racing, fair food, and a showcase of all kinds of animals. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Well, now we're joined by Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, but at the Illinois State Fair, in fact, this afternoon. Hey, thanks, Matt, for being with us. You showing cattle this week?
Yeah, my son will be showing tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday, so we'll have a busy weekend.
Well, good luck with that, and good luck to your son, too, on those shows, and hopefully he'll win some blue ribbons along the way. I was a bit concerned today when I talked with Dan Zwicker about what's been happening in Chicago on tomorrow's USDA reports. He's a little concerned that the trade now at 176 or thereabouts for corn might have a little bearish surprise tomorrow. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a possibility. You know, on the flip side, I guess it's hard to think that we would come in right out of the gate with an all-time record yield, too. 176.6 last year might be tough to eclipse, at least to start with. But then again, you know, ear counts are liable to be quite high. I think that, you know, planning for the most part went pretty good for most folks. And so you got to assume that at least population is going to be pretty good. There are a few problem areas, but for the most part, with the crop conditions report where there are, you know, I would share a little bit of his concern.
What are your thoughts about corn and soybean condition across the whole of the U.S. at this time?
Well, you know, there's just so much variability here and there, but you do have some areas, you know, a lot of folks in Central Illinois are sitting on a pretty darn good corn and bean crop. You look outside of there, and there's a lot of really good crops here and there, but just Iowa, for example, you know, there's certainly a lot of variability there. Some folks in the north didn't have much chance with way too much rain, and then you get in southern Iowa, it's awfully dry into northern Missouri. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that all plays out.
Any expectation from you about what the ending stocks number for next year for corn and soybeans will be?
You know, I think my official guess was shy of 1.7, at least to start with, but that's going to be heavily dependent upon this yield. So, you know, at this point in the game, I think that usage can be very strong. We got to realize exports could be awfully good with the problems in Russia, EU, and Ukraine. And I feel really good about supply and demand, both U.S. and world.
And so the WASD numbers are as important for you tomorrow as maybe the crop production figures.
I don't think we can ignore them. Absolutely.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you.
And good luck there at the Illinois State Fair. That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Joined us this afternoon from the Illinois State Fair. That kicked off today officially and runs through the 19th of this month. So if you get a chance, go visit the Illinois State Fair in Springfield. I'll be there on Tuesday of next week. And the folks that operate the talk show on our home station, WILL, will be there on Thursday. So check out willag.org and our WILL homepages for all that information. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenner is here. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. Can you start in the northwestern part of the Corn Belt and work your way to the east with the weather forecast?
Absolutely. The big problem that we have in the northwestern growing belt is that it hasn't rained very much over the last few weeks. As we move forward, there's not a whole lot of rain on the horizon. That could become problematic for soybeans and corn in North Dakota, South Dakota, and the northwest half of Minnesota. That region does include about 15 to 20% of U.S. production, so it is a significant area. And as we move forward, we're really going to want to see some rain develop in that region. The way it looks right now, there will be a couple of thunderstorms in that area Monday and Tuesday coming up. That's primarily as a cold front moves on through. But the problem is that there's not a lot of humidity associated with that front. And before that front comes through, it's going to be very hot with high temperatures in the 90s and low 100s. So not the best finish to the growing season in these areas unless we see something major change later next week or maybe 2 weeks out. We'll need to see a lot of rain in that area. So that's kind of the biggest problem region that we have in the United States at the moment. As we move off to the south and east, it has rained in different parts of the Corn Belt over the last week. We saw a really nice swath of heavy rain in parts of Iowa a few days ago, parts of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, even Michigan, where it was dry a few weeks ago. They all saw some pretty good rains over the last week or two. The only area that missed out is right along and just south of Interstate 80, stretching from Omaha, Nebraska, through the Quad Cities of Iowa and Illinois, and then to just south of Chicago through the Kankakee area. There's about a 60 to 70 mile wide swath that has managed to miss out on a lot of this rain lately. Now, more than likely, we're going to see some thunderstorms in this region tonight, especially in the Illinois region. We're not looking for heavy rainfall, but a quarter inch to a half of an inch is certainly a possibility. Additionally, we do have some rain that's on the horizon later next week. Remember that cool front we talked about? Well, that front that moves across the Dakotas without producing too much rain will have a little bit of a better chance to produce rain in the Corn Belt. That's primarily because humidity values should be a little bit higher by the time we get into the middle of next week. So we should see some rain in some of these drier areas. Once you put all this together, Todd, it's a little bit tricky to dissect it all. We know that the northwestern areas are going to need some rain and things are going to get worse before they get better. We know there's some dry pockets and some good pockets in the Corn Belt, and we know that some rain, but maybe not heavy rain, is on the way. When you put all this together, it's a little bit trickier to figure it all out, except to say that we still do have a few weeks to go before the story of the 2018 growing season is over.
And then if you turn your attention down under, the Australian wheat crop is suffering, I think, through some really dry conditions.
Well, they certainly are in Queensland and New South Wales. That region is in the eastern part of Australia, and they account for about 30% of national production. Some other areas have also been fairly dry. But one thing we do want to point out is that Western Australia, where about 40% of the crop is produced, has not been that dry over the last month or two. It started raining about 45 days ago, and it's continued to rain in some fashion, even as recently as last week. And if you look at soil moisture maps, they don't scream major problems for Western Australia, but for the rest of the country, let's say about half of the production belt, they certainly need some rain, and there's not a whole lot on the horizon. So that story is going to play out here fairly shortly because their reproductive season unfolds over the next 4 weeks.
Thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a great one.
You too. We'll talk with you again next week. That's Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. I'm Todd Gleason.